I'm Sarah Jessica Parker, in for Leonard Lopate. Kelsey Kirkland thrilled audiences at New York City Ballet and the American Ballet Theater, dancing leading roles and new works created for her by major choreographers in the course of her long career on the stage. And she even performed at Queen Elizabeth's 60th birthday gala at Covent Garden with Anthony Dowell. But now she's embarked on something even more ambitious. She and her husband, Michael Chernoff, are co-artistic directors of the Kelsey Kirkland Conservatory of Classical Ballet. They had their debut production just this past December with The Nutcracker, and they'll be performing Sleeping Beauty this May. Plus, they have a ballet camp planned for the summer. I am so thrilled to have both Kelsey Kirkland and Michael Chernoff with me now on this, my second day of hosting the Leonard Lopate Show. Welcome to you both.
Thank you,
Thank
Sarah,
you for Jessica. Having us.
Yep. It's a pleasure. So I was thinking that it takes great courage and can be scary in these economic times to start up your own conservatory. So how long was the planning part before it began in 2010?
We have been thinking about starting a school for maybe 10 years, but I think that we came back to the city to work with ABT on Sleeping Beauty, and once we finished that, we were so tired that we thought, okay, how can we really exhaust ourselves and come to our final end? We can open a school, so we decided to try, and it's been very successful, actually.
And what has been the most challenging part of forming a school, Michael?
Endurance, patience. Especially in the first, they say the first year, but actually it's been 4 years, and they've all been very difficult because we keep building and growing at a remarkable rate. And as you mentioned in your introduction, we started a company end of last year. And so there is another layer that gets added, and we've already had two seasons. One, as you mentioned, Nutcracker, and then recently, a month ago, we did a Symphony Space show, or two shows, and we've got Sleeping Beauty coming up. And all of this takes enormous amounts of planning, which I was never very good at. I was always good for the next hour or so. So it's
very
us.
Different being in administration
exactly.
versus showing up as a performer when you have only your schedule to
exactly.
think about.
It's a bit like being a parent. You just can't run away. You have to stay there.
Yes, and both of you take on parenting roles, probably roles and doing so in ways that maybe you wish you had been parented as ballet dancers. Does that affect the way you run the company?
Well, for me, the parenting role comes in the studio pretty much, trying to translate for students who have not had good early training, how to make catching up fun and very informative, and by doing that, to create an atmosphere of you can make mistakes, you know. You can not attach yourself to your image, but it's just fun to learn how things actually are put together and to keep that spirit of not searching for total perfection in the body, but you know, keeping the spirit healthy. So
how much are you seeing bad training? How common is that? And what does bad training mean to you both? That's a sort of a subjective, mm-hmm. or is it not?
I mean, well, I think it depends on what you are aiming for. And my aim very early on became to dance the classics. So to me, bad training is learning things that make it impossible for you to dance the classics. And there's a lot of that going on in this country. So that's my biggest love, is to try and correct that in this country, because it's everywhere. And to have to correct everything later is mind-boggling.
Yeah.
It's like you know, trying to learn a foreign language when you're 90, yes. I would imagine. So,
and you, we were speaking before we went on the air. Can you talk about where your company members are coming from? It's really astonishing, right? And so they bring with them.
So we've got a multi-ethnic, multinational school and company. By the way, it's the Academy of Classical Ballet, not the Conservatory. That's okay.
Forgive me. Sorry. We'll get that straight, the
but,
Academy.
You know, if I listed all the countries, we have multiple South American dancers, two Brazilians, some Colombians. We have dancers from Russia, three Russian dancers. We have an Israeli dancer, Korean, Japanese, French, an Eritrean, an Iranian. So we've got a good – we mustn't forget our Russian faculty and our Australian faculty as
well. Did you mention the Americans?
Oh, yes, there's a few
Americans. Details. I'm speaking – this is Sarah Jessica Parker. I'm speaking with Gelsey Kirkland and Michael Chernoff, co-artistic directors of the Gelsey Kirkland Academy of Classical Ballet. So, Michael, you're from Australia originally. And what kind of training – did you have there? And how early on did you start training as a ballet
dancer?
I'd
say I'm a good example of what Gelsey was talking about, bad training. my early training was at the National Theatre in Melbourne, Australia. And then I finished my training in London. But I started late. I was also an actor. But if I could just respond to what go on a little further about
sure.
what you were talking to Gelsey about, classical. There, and you mentioned the word subjective. It's a good word to bring up that the classicism versus eclecticism is one of the, let's say, conflicts that exist in our society. We live in a society that believes in, especially in the dance world, we have to be eclectic. We have to be able to do different styles now, because once upon a time, every ballet theater, opera theater, did their own thing, and that was all they did. Now you have to be able to do Petipa, you have to do Bournonville, Balanchine, whatever it is you're going to do. So if your training is eclectic, then it's going to be very hard for you have to choose at some stage, when are you going to do the classics? Mm. Can you just do the classics if you've got what we called, generic training.
Mm.
Generic rather than – style is the hardest thing to play, as in acting. To play Shakespeare is very different from playing television. So you have to learn style, and that has to be introduced at some stage. Of course, the fear, and I'll just finish, fear of some people is that if you introduce style too early, the dancers become stylized.
They're sort of limited.
Limited,
in some way.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think our school and our company proves the opposite.
And Gelsey, you're from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, is that
yes,
true?
That's where I was born.
And how did you come to study, speaking of training and style, specific style, how did you come to study at the School of American Ballet, and at what age?
I can only tell you my own memory.
Okay.
My memory is that my sister was there,
uh-huh.
and one day I ended up auditioning there in saddle shoes, but that's all I can remember, and they accepted me, and I think my mother just thought that it was a wonderful thing to have her girls in the ballet school.
But, and was there any, at any point, a question of any other career for you, or was it an immediate, visceral response to what was happening?
No, I definitely wanted to be a veterinarian and ride horses originally. And I think my father, of course, is a very famous playwright, mm-hmm. and when he was alive, he was very supportive of the theater. And so, of course, that's where I think my mother found the ballet as a good idea.
Is it true that the first ballet you saw was being danced by Margot Fonteyn and Nureyev, or Rudolf Nureyev? I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
It's possible.
And do you think that was a something your parents showed you because they were so...
My parents were my father stayed out of it altogether. My mother loved the ballet. But as far as first ballet scene, pretty much I was sneaking into all of the performances, so I don't think they would have known about it. Yeah. And Margot Fonteyn was, I think, my first biggest inspiration.
And, mm-hmm. and just to go back for a second, for those that don't know, can you talk about the plays that your father wrote? People might not know the connection.
His most famous play was Tobacco Road, which was the second longest running play on Broadway.
My gosh.
Yeah.
And for both of you, you worked in the theater, you mentioned. At some point, had your paths ever crossed over the course of your careers prior to meeting that initial? And so then how did you both meet?
We met at a coaching session for another dancer.
So you benefited as well in some way, not just the dancer from your...
Well. Yeah.
I think so.
Well, Misha being in the theater is an important element because, of course, in terms of training classical dancers, one of my loves is to bring pantomime and the point of view of a theatrical director onto the scene. So it's not ballet dancers trying to figure out what the story is about, which can be limited. And so to try and open up the minds and of dancers and the way they think about things is very important.
When you came together for that coaching, that initial coaching session, did you find that you had similar techniques at the time? Did you both connect to this idea of great storytelling and emotion?
Coming from totally different places. As Gelsey mentioned, she was coming from that classical ballet point of view, and I was working as an actor full time. So what attracted us to each other was totally opposite. In fact, we didn't even like each other to begin with, and that's saying it nicely.
But you recognized that together you were giving this dancer a more complete experience as a performer. Would that be accurate? That your theatrical experience and your exquisite technique, but also your love of the emotional part of the dancer's life must have been wonderful for whomever you were coaching, I would say.
I think, well, one of the problems is that people get locked into perfectionism in ballet, and then they can't express themselves. Using their voice, for instance, becomes almost impossible, and you have this little, "Hi, I'm a dancer," you know? Mm-hmm. You know, head voice, no chest voice, and trying to get people to feel that it's okay to make mistakes, as Gelsey said, to be a little ugly at times, because if you're always working on being beautiful, then what happened to the other end of the spectrum?
Mm-hmm.
And the voice tends to hide all that. You can hide inside your voice inside yourself. So getting people to use their breath to vocalize, which we do every single morning before class, we get the dancers to vocalize.
I'd actually love to talk more about coaching and what the emphasis of this academy and the company has been. I'm speaking with the acclaimed dancer Gelsey Kirkland and her husband Michael Chernoff about their careers and launching the Gelsey Kirkland Academy of Classical Ballet, and we will have more after the break. Hi, I'm Sarah Jessica Parker, and today for Leonard Lopate, I'm speaking with Gelsey Kirkland and Michael Chernoff, co-artistic directors of the Gelsey Kirkland Academy of Classical Ballet. Right before the break, we started on a very interesting conversation, which is coaching dancers. But I sort of wanted to back up a little bit and just talk about initially what you're looking for in a dancer. I think, you know, there are lots of sort of probably outdated ideas about a dancer. Oh, she has a dancer's body, and that's a dancer's figure. And can you talk a little bit about how you initially look for dancers and what you look for in that casting process? And then we can talk about the coaching.
Mm-hmm. I think during an audition, I like to wait until the very end of class where you're putting together a dancing combination so that you can see if the dancer is musical and coordinated. Also, if they have the spirit of dance is very often a gift that you can't teach. And some people have tremendous limitations and their bodies are not in any way perfect, but that they, when they have the opportunity to be in that element, they resolve things in creative ways on their own, and you have to be able to see if you're going to find that special talent there. So you
can't
looking tell.
Beyond an audition, some people aren't great auditioners. So you're saying that you're allowing an environment to be created where you can see sort of past that. Is that
well we
past what
I think what I'm saying is that I would never judge a student on how they look at the bar, how their image is, how perfect their feet and legs are, how long their neck is. I'm not ruling that out. That's fantastic.
Right.
If they have it all, it's miraculous. But
right.
It just means that the biggest talent isn't necessarily in that. And so we are looking for also potential actors, people who can respond to very meticulous work, because acting is actually very analytical, and so very often dancers don't have the patience to go through a difficult process, and they're very natural dancers, but they don't actually have that, they just can't bear it, you know, because it you have to really sort of trial by fire, you know.
And
can I interrupt also?
Yes,
that the acting process has to be passed through the body, which makes it different from regular acting. So you can't just teach regular acting to dancers. It's certainly helpful, but it doesn't go anywhere if they can't use their body to express the action. And action is the most important thing to teach how to do. So you have to break everything down to what are you doing at this moment, and try to disguise that process with dancers so it doesn't become something artificial, because they cringe. Dancers go, oh, that's foreign. So we have to make it, we sort of have to trick them into it, sort of.
And when you have a company that's coming together from all parts of the world, how do you artistically, you know, encourage what's special about them individually, but also kind of coalesce an idea, an artistic idea for the company? Because that must be a point that's important to you as well. Is that complicated, or have you learned from your own past what dancers and people need in that process?
Well, it could be complicated, but actually the overall process, you have to start in the schooling. Because you have to make a decision about what system you're going to teach, because all of the detail and that you work on in class is connected to what you're going to do on stage and the repertoire you're doing. So there's no point in training in different systems and then expecting something to happen on stage that has style. You have to start in the classroom. So we teach the Russian system, but Mish and I have both learned it from a very different background than a Russian would learn it. But we have many Russian teachers on the staff, and we complement each other, because we cover a whole area that they don't, in that we're doing remedial training for students, which means that the mechanics of the body have to work in a different way, that if you're accepted at a very early age with a perfect instrument, you treat that differently than you would an imperfect instrument. So it's the same system, but maybe Misha can talk a little bit about that.
Well, I wanted to address what Sarah Jessica said about bringing out people's talent. The system, and I agree with Gelsey here, if you don't give them a strong technique, a well-founded and logical technique, the individual potentials don't come out. They look generic. Doesn't matter how expressive they may be. So first thing you have to do is you have to give them a structure. And then through that structure, which is classicism, they can express themselves. Then there's a chance, as long as you don't stifle it by being a perfectionist. You know, and that's always a difficult balance.
Speaking of expressing themselves, your first production was The Nutcracker. I would assume that that had some meaning for you, given your history with the ballet. I have two questions about that experience. The first is just going back in time and recalling that 1977 televised.
Yes.
Was that the first time you were playing, you were dancing the Sugar? Correct?
I was dancing Clara in that version.
In that 77 version.
Not exactly the first time in my days at the School of American Ballet. I actually rehearsed Clara, but then I got fired.
Okay, I wanted to hear that. I wanted to know that story and see if that was just a myth at this point.
No.
So can you just briefly tell us, why would they fire you?
Well, my one of my close friends, there were two Claras and the two princes, and my prince, I wasn't happy with.
What an unusual fairy tale. And what a sort of interesting, more modern take. And so how did you express your dissatisfaction with your prince?
Oh, it's shameful.
Well, you were young, it's all right.
Yes, and my prince was
easy.
Absolutely.
How
handsome.
Did you express it? You didn't.
I didn't hold his hand.
That was.
I refused to hold his hand. Yeah.
And so they summarily fired you.
They certainly did. They certainly.
But
did.
Apparently, your talent spoke louder because you came back to the role, and to the televised production. Correct.
Yes. I was forgiven, obviously.
Was that the first time you were ever going to be performing on national television? And if so, was it thrilling, terrifying, wonderful?
You want to know the truth about it?
Well, if you feel comfortable sharing with most of New York City.
Okay. Well, there are many different angles because, first of all, I was dancing with Baryshnikov, which is a great honor. But the fact is that when you dance for television, the whole way they approach it, it's very different than doing a performance. So, of course, the problem for me was always the acting. How am I going to do a good acting job? So I brought my mime coach with me, and we were running back and forth.
Who, by the way, teaches at our school.
Yes.
Pilar
wonderful.
Garcia.
We were running in and out, you know, trying to work it out while the directors of the film were changing perspective and all of this. So you had to constantly figure out what mimetic gesture you needed to do.
For television
exactly.
versus the live theater.
Right, and
how old were you at this time?
I think I was 26 or 28.
And would that be typical that a dancer would be that concerned? I mean, I think it's so interesting how invested you were.
Yeah, I think that was, I have to be grateful for that gift because I knew that I couldn't act, which is great. I knew I had to learn how to act. I recognized that my body was not able to. I think it's from having seen Margot Fonteyn, from having seen Carla Fracci, and who was a great Italian ballerina, understanding that they were doing something that I had no knowledge of. So I was constantly searching for how to bridge that gap, you know.
I'm Sarah Jessica Parker. I'm sitting in for Leonard Lopate. I'm speaking with Gelsey Kirkland and Michael Chernoff, co-artistic directors of the Gelsey Kirkland Academy of Classical Ballet. If we could just talk one more second about Nutcracker. There's a great quote I read about your search for your Maurice and what you were looking for. And you described sort of weight versus lightness. And I don't want to blow the quote, but I guess basically then you said you were looking for wrestlers, which I thought was such an interesting way of describing what is required of a dancer. It's not what someone might think, and if maybe you could kind of elaborate on that a little bit.
Well, that to look light, you have to be a wrestler and build the resistance into the body so that you only appear light. But the more weight you have, actually, the more the lighter you'll look. But in terms of weight, maybe moving on to Sleeping Beauty and the weight
yes.
of that ballet,
yeah,
which is coming up.
And you have performances in May?
May 16th, yes. 17th, and 18th.
At the Schimmel?
Yep, Michael Schimmel Center for the Arts at Pace University at Lower Manhattan.
Great.
Yeah, and you can go there on gelseykirklandballet.org, which is our website, to get tickets.
And we have links on our show page also for
Great.
Our listeners to your to your website
and
to those dates as well. I was just wondering about, you know, we talked a little bit about the discipline of dance, the perfection that's required, the exacting nature of it, having technique in order to be free, to be yourself, but also being a healthy dancer. And you know, Gelsey, you've shared in the past your own feelings on what was difficult, what you struggled with, and now as parents in some way of this company, you must be uniquely qualified to discern, to see, to notice when someone else might not, if a dancer is struggling with the high standards, with the expectations, with issues about body and weight. And do you feel uniquely qualified? Do you see yourself as providing what would be a very special comfort and insight to a dancer?
Can I say that mm-hmm. what I think that is, I don't think we feel qualified, but what we are is connected to them.
Mm.
So we can see when there's a problem very early. We can see it in their eyes, in the corridor, for instance, when someone's troubled and conflicted in themselves. And there's always people like that, because one of the things they discover by coming to the school or the company is this for them? So they dedicate their whole life to this. But first they have to go through a crucible to find out if they can.
And do you feel, though, while you said you're not qualified, I guess, do you feel that...
We all feel vulnerable. Nobody feels like an expert. We know what we know. We know we love what we do. We try to pass that love on to the dancers. But there's always a unique problem. And, you know, it's about engagement, trying to stay connected to people,
being
alert.
And did you, Gelsey, have people like that in your career as a dancer? Did you feel like you had those people that could see something in you, or did that not exist at that time? Or did you not recognize it?
The problem is when you have these problems, you try to disconnect from people, you know, because it takes hold and it's very isolating. So even if people are around you, you tend to move away from them. Of course, if we had $1 billion, we would have a company and a character company as well, and we would try and encourage, you know, a point of view about ballet. I know people come to the performances and love the performances, and those bodies are not perfect. Somebody actually just said yes, but they know what they're doing.
Mm.
They actually know what they're doing, one of the critics. So that was recognized. But, you know, we're sort of brainwashed into now you have to see these perfect bodies. Of course, if we had money to support a company, we would take in dancers in a more imperfect state. But the pressure comes when they feel they have to fit in to what the world expects.
Well, the money comes in when people are interested in what they're investing. And that brings us to the problem of classicism today. People are investing in all kinds of broad things, but are they interested in preserving classicism? Classicism and the society is very connected. In other words, when a society is not connected to the same values as classicism, they start to lose interest in it. And in reference to that book that was written called Apollo's Angels, which is a wonderful book. The best book I've read on ballet history.
I think the writer was on this very show. Yes.
Great book. Is ballet dying? I don't think it's ballet that's dying. It could be society that's dying, because ballet is, it just is. And the interest in it is dying. But going back to that $1 million, we are looking for board members.
Yes.
So if anyone out there is interested in supporting classicism and wants to come in and meet us, we'd love to meet you.
Quickly, guys, I know I'm running out of time a little bit, but I wanted to ask about your days of performing, and I always wonder about people who teach, who are performers, people who become directors mm-hmm. and teachers, and are you able, it takes an enormous amount of generosity, are you able to find the same satisfaction in teaching and directing that you found in your most fulfilled and happy days on stage? Sharing knowledge, is it a mm-hmm. satisfying experience for you both in the same way, or does that matter?
For me, it's more satisfying because you're responsible for others, so it's not so much about you. So it takes that pressure of you out, hopefully. Else?
I agree with that, and I would just add that it was not so at the beginning of my teaching career because I wasn't trained. And you don't realize, because in America, you assume that if you were on the stage as a professional, you can teach. But that's not so everywhere, and it took me a while to become frustrated enough to realize that if I was going to have the tools to be able to pass on the right things, that I would have to learn how to teach. So,
and one last question, and unfortunately we have to go. Mm-hmm. I could speak to you both forever, but teaching somebody else a role, a beloved role of yours, mm-hmm. what is that like? And where do you begin? And I'm giving you no time to answer the question, but if you can give us just a little morsel.
Well, you begin at the beginning.
That's a silly question of mine. I'm sorry. Fair enough. We'll just have that be a tease, and hopefully we'll have time for another discussion. I've been speaking with the acclaimed dancer Gelsey Kirkland and her husband Michael Chernoff about their careers and launching the Gelsey Kirkland Academy of Classical Ballet. Gelsey and Michael, thank you very, very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure.